and I have a quiz for you right off the bat. This was the template they gave me to use for Tech Ed New Zealand. And I was looking at it and said, you know what, something's not quite right. I want you to tell me what's not quite right about this particular slide. The Microsoft logo? No, that's good question, but no, it's not the Microsoft logo. Come on. How, I'm in a room full of Kiwis, and that needs to happen. There you go. Now it's set, and now it's correct. So I'm going to be talking about what's new inside Active Directory with Windows Server 2012. And also in homage to Tech Ed New Zealand, I decided to change the standard logo from the arrow with the pointer to a modern UI version Kiwi up in the corner. So you'll see that in all my slide presentations this week. And as I did last year, I gave away some prizes, and so I'll also be giving away prizes this year. If you weren't here last year, being from Canada, we're known for our maple syrup. So I have two small bottles of maple syrup to give away for good questions and good comments in the session. But when I announced that I was going to be doing that online, someone actually came up and says, you're the one that did it. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Apparently, there was a maple syrup theft back in Canada, and I swear it wasn't me. Someone stole, 30 million liters from the Canadian maple syrup reserve. You know, United States has an oil reserve in cases of fuel crisis. Canada, we have maple syrup reserves. Go figure. Anyway, this is clean. It's not contraband. It's all yours up for grabs and what we're going to be talking about today. But today's session, we're going to be talking specifically around Active Directory. And I'm not a fan of agenda slides, but people like agendas, so here you go. We're going to start off with some objectives and some takeaways for what we're going to be talking about today. Areas of investment, so basically talking about how the Active Directory team approached this next release of Server 2012. Some cool new features and enhancements, and then a summary of how you can run this. Because my ultimate goal out of this is you'll be walking out of here so damn stoked that you want to go off and install Active Directory, the current version, domain controllers running Server 2012, especially since today is the general availability. You can go off and download it right now. So you can go off and do this. So a lot of the changes came into play, some from within the Active Directory team and some being asked to be done by external teams, by the Active Directory team, which is kind of cool. And the neat thing about this is that in the past, it used to be a lot of concern of people deploying new versions of Active Directory because they were in different versions of Active Directory forest mode levels and domain mode levels. And so I like to find out who knows what functional levels are in Active Directory. Anybody? Come on. Well, you have a 2000 level. You have a 2003 level. You have a 2008 level. 2008 R2 level. 2012 level. One, two, three. That's about five levels. Most of these functionalities that we'll be talking about today do not require advanced levels. So even if you're running at 2003 level forest, you can introduce 2012 domain controllers into it and still do some of the stuff we'll be talking about today. Because I know most of you are probably still running 2003 levels, just because I know. So the objectives for being looking at, basically giving you an understanding of what the broad areas are for the investment purposes of Active Directory, looking at some cool things to do with Active Directory features and functionalities, and also because there is so much information in this slide deck, there's over 90 slides that I will not be going through today. In total, I'll be going through most of them. You'll be able to download them from the TechEd website for New Zealand, and you'll have all the reference information for you on the slides, so you don't have to worry about taking about notes. You can get them. They're all inside the slides. We will take a look at it. And the way that I've organized this is based on kind of like depth of topic at the front when you're all awake, and then the light fluffy stuff at the end, which is UI based and graphical based and stuff like that, which you can probably read yourself and figure out yourself to be able to take a look at it. So that's generally how we're going to be running this session today, in case you're interested. So Active Directory, areas of investment, what did we do? Well, first off is we looked at what are the blockers for deploying Active Directory? What can we do to be able to fix that? And probably one of the things that came up the most with some of the blockers with Active Directory were people's concern and paranoia of going and running a little tool called AD Prep, or AD Prep 32, or AD Prep 64, whichever one it happens to be. And I see almost everyone's nodding their heads, and they're all saying, yes, yes, I don't want to do that, I'm very, very scared about it, which is kind of interesting. Well, you'll be happy to know the Active Directory prep exists no more. Golf clap, anyone? Come on. Happy? Yes? Good? Good? It now is not a separate tool. You don't have to run it. It is now part of some prerequisites that go on and prerequisites check that happen inside this beautiful little wizard. And that was a big block for a lot of people, so we just got rid of it. You just don't use it anymore. Schema enhancements still take place. They're not as crazy and scary as when people might think that they are, but they are available to be done. They just don't, they're not done through the AD prep process. The idea is that Active Directory also needs to be scalable, so it's designed for working within your own organization and also being able to host it in other places as well, like maybe Azure, infrastructure as a service, and that sort of stuff. So yes, you can go off and do that. The other big blocker people had, believe it or not, was the confusion with DC Promo. So DC Promo basically was taken out back and shot. It's gone. No longer exists as a separate program. It now is also part of the native install process of what you'd be using to install Active Directory, which is simply a role and a feature. It can now be done all through the server manager, which also means, as you'll find out a little bit, it can be done remotely without having to be done on the individual boxes themselves, which is actually very, very, very cool. Consistency through the management experience is definitely very important as well, to be able to not have to jump back and forth between 15 different tools, some command lines, some GUI, everything else like that. And then finally, some other new areas of things for investment, which is security and access control, where Active Directory now supports these things that are called claims-based accesses, requests for clients and for devices against individual files that can be used for things like, something radical. Oh, I'll save that. I want to save that one there a little bit later for where that comes back. But claims-based authentication for dynamic access control, love it. You will love it when you walk out of here. You're going to want to go off and forever shun the concept of AGLP and use dynamic access control instead. So the goals were basically, first of all, there's this little thing that's taking place in industry right now called, virtualization, which is rather important. And since it's now being done where there are more virtual servers being deployed than our physical hardware out there these days, we should probably make it so Active Directory works really well with virtualization, which means that how are we going to be able to protect you when you go off and clone your domain controllers or snapshot your domain controllers without completely obliterating the consistency of your Active Directory. And I see people smiling, so I know you've probably gone and done a snapshot before and you've had some problems and you can't hide behind the sunglasses, sir, I can see you there. So yes, there are problems that can happen if you simply go off and snapshot and reapply. It's like literally going in a way back time machine with your Active Directory and then bringing it back online again. It's not a good deal. We've got that fixed and I'll show you how to do it. So, it's very, very simple. The deployment of Active Directory, as I mentioned, how you can deploy them very fast and very quick. You can actually now do with a new environment, if you had a complete and catastrophic failure of your entire network across every single one of your physical sites, but you happen to have one copy of your Active Directory in a VHD file, you can rebuild your entire Active Directory infrastructure faster than you could in the past by simply cloning 10 new domain controllers like that and be done with it. And it's all supported, all safe, and it all works because of the investments that we've made. So fantastic stuff. And then finally, the management side of things, it's just simply a matter of, and if you attended Tony's session last about the Active Directory Administrative Center, that will be your friend. Don't shun it like you might have in the previous versions, thinking it was just this kind of flaky tool that kind of had some functionality, but it was more for junior administrators. You can do everything inside of it. And on top of that, you can do it all through PowerShell as well. So very, very cool stuff with the way this works. So that being said, to get into the actual meat of where everything goes, we've got basically two big buckets. Left-hand side is going to be the place with an awful lot of more depth to it as far as how it works, what it does, and the change that we made to it, which is known as deployment, virtualization technology, rapid deployment, and then platform changes. And then we'll talk about the lighter stuff at the very end from a management perspective. So with that, looking at this, first off, simplified deployment. What was the problem with being able to do things? Well, in the past, you used to have to go in, install a member server, have it up and running, join into the domain, and then go off and say, okay, I want to make this guy into a 2012 domain controller. Sorry, 2008 R2 domain controller. I do, okay, DC promo. Sorry, you can't do that. You have to do an AD prep first and extend your schema. Okay, AD prep. Sorry, that program doesn't work. Why? Oh, it's a 32-bit program. It's a 64-bit operating system. I can't, this doesn't work. So end up working it all out, you have to go off and do it. And then perhaps, maybe you're not even on the right system to do an 80 prep on. Which FSMO role do you have to be on to be able to run 80 prep? You have to be on your infrastructure master. Who do you have to be signed on as to be able to do it? Enterprise admins, to be able to go off and to do your schema extensions. And you've probably also gone off and done all your proper work, and you've revised and looked at all the LDIF files to make sure they're all correct, the schema is not going to overlap on different things, and you're submitted it to your committee that gets reviewed for all the schema changes every 6 months whenever they convene in Geneva or something to be able to do it. All that was good back in 2000 when you had to be that paranoid about setting your schema. You don't need to worry about that as much anymore. So generally speaking, it's a lot simpler now. You don't have to worry about 80 prep where that goes. So we've got the right 80 prep tools. It's now gone. It's part of the install process. You run the prep tools in the correct sequence, and then you go off and you wait for things to converge. Nowadays, it's literally just running Server Manager. Everything is there. I literally go in, bring up a member server inside my 2003 environment. I then go in and I run Server Manager against that box locally or remote with remote RSAT tools onto that box. And you say, add new role, domain controller with directory services. And it goes off and does a whole whack of stuff in the background. It's a first-class citizen now. It's not the secondary tool you have to worry about. It's going to go off and, first of all, check your schema. What version is it? Oh, it needs to be updated. I'll go check your credentials. Can you update that? Yes, you're enterprise admins. Are you on the right box? No. I'll go off and find the right box and do it for you. I'll go off and then do it completely remotely. It's going to go up and basically also align all the questions that it asks you so they actually make sense. And that they're the most common things you're going to want to do, like add another domain controller into an existing domain inside an existing forest, as opposed to asking it to you backwards. Do you want to make a new forest? Do you want to make a new domain in that new forest? Do you want to join an existing domain in that forest? We just made the questions easier to understand, to be able to do it. So you still can do the schema separate if you wanted to be able to take a look at it. You don't need to. It does it for you if you have the proper credentials. AD prep basically had to be completely rewritten. And then basically now just included as part of the PowerShell commands to be able to do it. Everything points to basically being able to find all the problems, identify what they are, resolve them on the spot, make it so you can just keep on hitting next to be able to do it. So that's how easy it is to do this install to be able to do it. So good stuff that's there for simplified deployment. Now, some other stuff that's changed. We first of all, as I mentioned, integrated all together with your process automation. It goes in and it validates your environment beforehand, tells you what needs to be updated, and offers to update it for you. It goes in and gives you the ability to do this all remotely on a single box, as opposed to having to figure out which of the boxes has the FSMO roles on it for you. Align your configuration wizard to the most common things that you're going to want to do. Integrate your full deployment experience in a single server manager, and then finally give you all the options to be able to do that, and it's all built on top of PowerShell, so you can do it from PowerShell if you wanted to automate it. We basically tried to remove all of the different barriers. To do this, your target forest only has to be, and yes, you are seeing this correctly, 2003 functional level to get a 2012 box in there. Caveat, that doesn't mean you can just take your 2012 install media and install it on a 2003 box and then upgrade it in place upgrade, because why? It's 32-bit if it's 2003, not 64-bit. So stay tuned for more information about how you can simply leapfrog these guys incorrectly to be able to do it. But basically, 2003 function level is all you have to worry about, and that can become the first 2012 domain controller. You have to also be an enterprise admin and have schema administrative capabilities to be able to manage the schema to run that individual process. After that, you only need to be a domain admin to install new domain controllers. Radical concept. That's it. What else do you have to worry about? Well, since 2000, DC Promo has always been intolerant of network failures and transient networks that were being used. And so this kind of came across, actually, interestingly enough, when we were trying to go off and to install Active Directory in Azure with intermittent links between Azure and, it used to be, it's called Project Brooklyn, that allows you to make a VPN connection into your own local environment to get your Active Directory up there. It basically would take too long to be able to finish and basically came up with some problems. Anyway, we fixed that. So now 2012 will go in and continuously retry for the first time you do your install process. We're not talking about replication after it's set up, but just for the first time it's set up. In the past, it basically would go in and fail, basically, if you had bad network connectivity. Now it simply goes on and continues to retry until you decide to cancel it. So if you decide that it's taken too long for a 2 gig DIT file to get replicated up to the cloud into Azure, you can simply hit cancel. It'll continue with the install process, and then it'll do a regular replication to get the rest of the information up there if you wanted to. So the retry logit was basically fixed and very handy. Next up is the install for media and how it changed. If you guys remember this, during DC promo in the past, you had a /ADV switch you could run for advanced, and that would allow you to install from a local copy of your DIT file that would speed up your replication time between sites. Basically, you could replicate and install or import, if you will, 5 gigs of your DIT file on local disk, and then it would simply finish that off and then replicate the rest for what happened. We've now changed that so that it makes it even easier, because in the past, not many people did this, you had the ability to go off and do an offline defrag to make your DIT file smaller. Now you don't have to. You can leave it as big as you want for that import process, and it'll still go ahead and import it correctly when you do an advanced install for media. The command inside NTDS util is called IFM prep, which now includes the option to eliminate the defrag with a switch. Just be warned, the default is it will still try to do an offline defrag. You have to flip the switch to say, no, skip it. Just go ahead and prepare me the media, please, and it'll give it to you as it is. The downside of that is you'll have a DIT file that maybe is 5 gigs in size. The data may be only 2 gig in size, and you have all this extra space. Don't worry about it. It'll go away eventually. So it's like it's like the closet in my house. It's always going to fill up no matter how big you get the damn closet. So same thing. Don't worry about it. You can throw the switch. You cannot have to worry about doing an offline defrag, and then you can basically do your import of your content with the IFM prep mode of doing the install, which basically makes it faster to be able to go off and speed up your deploy. Other changes as far as deployment's concerned, I don't know if anyone here uses this, but Active Directory Federation Services used to be an out-of-band downloadable tool you had to go off and download to be able to do federation services with Active Directory. Now it's in the box. 2.1 is inside the box. The latest version with 2.1 has a little bit of extra stuff inside of it that basically allows your federated Active Directory to support claims-based authentication. That's the major difference. Otherwise, it's essentially the same as 2.0. So if you are going to be doing claims-based access and you're using federation services, you're going to want to make sure that you use the copy, which is built-in box, which is version 2.1. So that's the quick piece on deployment. DC promo is now built in. AD prep is no longer required. It's now behind the covers. Done through PowerShell and done through Server Manager Interface, can be done remotely. It troubleshoots the stuff you need to be able to get it finished, and it's all good. Next up is virtualization technology. Who here virtualizes systems inside their environments? Everybody put up your hand, because I know you all run virtualization. Everybody does. Who here virtualizes domain controllers right now today on 2008 R2? Okay, leave your hands up. Who here has applied a snapshot and screwed up their Active Directory? Everyone always puts their hands down when asked that question. No one says that. I can check PSS support logs and find out if you're lying. So the reason why I say this is because virtualization is so prevalent, you have to basically make your most important asset, which is your identities of all of the people that you have, all your securities, all based on SIDs and objects and how they're accessing objects. If you don't protect that and you virtualize it and you inadvertently have a junior admin, because it's never you that does it, the junior admin comes in and says, oh, you know, they need to do a backup, I'll snapshot that, and then 6 months down the road, someone inadvertently decides to reapply that snapshot, and you now have this lovely hole in your Active Directory with that one little click, and it's all done. The idea behind it is basically that you've got an interesting thing with USNs. USN values are basically used to identify changes to the Active Directory into objects and creation of objects, and when two domain controllers talk, they basically assume that if I know who you are, domain controller number one, with your identifier, and whenever we talked, last time you told me you talked, we talked and your USN value was 300, let's say. And then now you roll back in time to 150. So I'm missing 150 changes according to the guy that rolled back in time. They talk again. This guy doesn't check. He says, last time we talked was 300. Give me those new 150 items that you just created a second ago. Now you have a problem. You have 150 items with the same SID. You also now have this bubble of weirdness of this one guy that doesn't know what time it is and is kind of stuck in a time warp. And so basically, you got to fix this. It's not a good thing when it happens. So we have a solution for this now. The caveat with this is that it needs to be installed and working. Your domain controller has to be 2012, and it has to be installed on a hypervisor that supports VMgen ID. Currently, we are the only hypervisor that supports VMgen ID. We just were GA today. However, because we are fair partners with everybody else, we have laid out all the details of how to implement VMgen ID to all the other manufacturers. It starts with V, ends in E. And also the one that starts with X for Zen, for Cisco. For Citrix. They have the specs, all the know-how, and have indicated that they will also be supported in their next revision. I don't know when it comes out, but in the next revision they'll support it. So that's the big thing. We support it. The concept is basically Server 2012 running has the ability to determine when a snapshot is applied and then does some fancy magic. And it does not rewrite the replication protocol, does not rewrite a whole bunch of other stuff without Active Directory works. It's simply a matter of a quick check that now has to happen to kind of simplify it down. So remember that scenario where you had the guy that rolled back in time and then they try to replicate? That's basically making a USN bubble effect inside that one guy. Now picture this in production, in case you don't understand the severity of this. 10 domain controllers. One guy rolls back in time, and then they then continue to replicate. I'll give you the easiest scenario. Nothing's changed. They just continue to replicate. And then you get a help desk call from a person that says, I can't log on. Oh, okay, well just, you know, put in your password, type. Is caps lock on? No. Okay, are you sure you're typing correctly? Yes, I'm positive. When did you change your password? Oh, a couple of days ago. Oh, okay, well, everything should be fine. And then they go off and they log on and it works. And then they go again and it works. And they go again and it works. And go again, oops, it doesn't work. 10 domain controllers, 1 out of 10 times they try it. If they get that one domain controller, it's not going to work. It's going to be their old password. And the other 9 domain controllers, it will work because they're replicated and they're up to date. They know what it is. So that's one tiny nuance of what could happen when it goes wrong. So what we've done is basically the VM generation ID. So the VM generation ID basically is an attribute that is inside the actual running state of the VM that is actually stored in the ACPI table if you're interested. And it's generated at the time when the system boots. And then whenever you go in and you apply a snapshot, the VM generation ID is going to change. And it's going to be different. And whenever a write is committed to the Active Directory, it knows what VM generation ID did that. And so basically, if the Active Directory goes in and says, oh, new object being created, 1 second, VM gen ID, ooh, they don't match. Sorry, evasive action, there's a problem here. I've got to go in and do a bunch of stuff before I can take that write request that you've now done. That's the simplest form of understanding how VM gen ID does. So what it does is basically is it dumps its RID pool, so it can't have any duplicate SIDs. It goes in and dumps its invocation ID, which is what is used to uniquely identify the domain controller. So all intents and purposes, it's now a new domain controller, same name, but it's a new domain controller for replication purposes. And then what's going to happen is the RID pool is dumped. Then what's going to happen is it's going to start a replication with that guy, and it's going to say, hi, this is me. My invocation ID is this. And he's going to say, I've never seen you before. Here's all the stuff that you should know. And it gets back into sync again. It prevents you having a bubble. It's that simple. What it does. It's a beautiful little piece of code for how it works. And that's essentially what you need to worry about. It is run your domain controllers on Hyper-V, and that's it. And make sure they're 2012. Here's the impact of what that was. You got an existing guy, time is T1, it has a RID pool of 500 to 1,000, it has 100 USN state. Goes in, and 100 users are added, and it goes in and replicates with the other guy. It now has a RID pool of 600 to 1,000, because 100 RIDs are actually to be used. And all those users and objects get replicated up, and they all get happy, and it's all good. A snapshot was applied back to the very first one, and it goes back in time to USN 100, not 200, and the RID pools roll back to 500. It then now goes in and has a replication issue with this guy, and he even goes so far as to create 150 more new users as well. So it's a worst-case scenario. The end result is the USN rollback did not happen. The VM Gen ID was not identified because he's using a non-Microsoft Hyper-V guy out there. The end result is basically you now have approximately 150 people that are in limbo that have duplicate SIDs or don't exist inside your Active Directory. So that's the old way. You don't have to worry about that anymore. Virtualization safe technology simply requires that you have your 2012 domain controller running on Hyper-V, and that's it. Nothing else. Feel free to snapshot and go on from there. Word of caution, though. Don't use snapshots as your primary form of backup. Still backup, still do good due diligence and everything else. And if you have any people that still don't believe that this works, set it up in a lab and try it out. It's very simple to show how this works and get the naysayers that have also taken all the medicine that Microsoft has given them that says thou shalt not run a snapshot on top of your domain controller and have now evolved. Rapid deployment. Moving right along. First off, because we can now handle clone systems now and snapshots on systems. In the past, basically, to set up a brand new domain controller is an awful lot easier. In the past, you'd have to go in, do the install, get it all set to go, get the guy up and running as a sysprep, and then you can basically go and take that non-domain controller image and apply him elsewhere. And then when he comes up, then you can do DC promo on him, you can automate it, and then have it all take place. But it's not exactly a very fast thing. When you promote a domain controller, you could speed things up by doing a install for media option of, again, bringing the DIT file up from a backup if you wanted to. But then you still have more configuration stuff you have to do in the background. So it's not terribly fast for what you're using right now. The new way of doing this is simply doing domain controller cloning. Yes, you can literally clone your domain controllers. So the way this works basically is you authorize a domain controller as the source to be a clone by adding that computer account into a group that you'll see in just a minute. And then that particular domain controller inside that group has a bunch of PowerShell scripts executed against it from the command line. And then those scripts are basically going to go in and prep it and identify where it should talk to the PDC emulator to be able to see if it's authorized and also be issued the proper credentials to become a non-same clone computer name, to become a new computer name and a new IP address and stuff like that. And generally speaking, it's a game changer when it comes to disaster recovery. If you had 10 sites and you had one of them that happened to, say you had five of them all appear underwater and you need to be able to bring them back up again quite quickly in new higher ground office locations, you could simply go in and literally take your clone domain controller and deploy five of them off those new locations. They would boot up the very first time, find the PDC emulator, become authorized, have the computer accounts created for them, and then do a replica from the local copy, and then update the replica from other network-connected copies, and he's up and running, as opposed to having to do it the old-fashioned way of doing authoritative restores and moving stuff around and doing system state backups. Now it's much, much faster to be able to do it. How this works, very simple. I'll give you the block flow, and then I'll actually give you the step-by-step if you're interested. First off, you have to have NTDS start up. It's already been authorized. It's already good to go. The cloned image initializes. It goes in and takes a look and checks its gen ID and says, oh, the gen ID that I have is incorrect because I have a new one. It's a new machine. And the old one is not the same. Therefore, consider me brand new. It then goes in and checks the value against the DIT file, realizes that it's different, goes in and resets itself, and then goes in and checks for a config file that's made by these PowerShell scripts. These PowerShell scripts are going to go in and do things like identify who the PDC emulator is, what the IP address is, the networking settings that it should be there, and everything like that. It then runs DC promo with a fixed clone switch on it for you automatically, where it reads this information from the XML config file. It's able to configure the network and have connectivity. It finds the PDC emulator. It then goes in and does a call to that guy to say, hey, I'm a clone DC. And that guy goes in and says, oh, okay, hang on a second. Are you authorized to be a clone? Yes, you are. You're from the good source. So therefore, I will continue. I'll create you a brand new domain controller object with the new computer name that you'll be using. And I'll also go in and make all the appropriate source level objects to do replication. I'll store that in the Active Directory, and I'll pass this information back to you with your new computer account and password. It then goes and continues, changes the computer name, has the secure password to be able to do its authentication, and site that it should belong to. It then does an IFM, install for media, and gets the clone copy of the DIT file as its starting point, and then allows itself to basically finish the initialization, finish the rest of the setup sysprep tasks, restart the box, comes back up, and does a regular replication for whatever's missing that's out there. That's how easy a clone DC is now. You can deploy DCs like that, very, very fast. One caveat, you cannot have a PDC emulator be the source of the clone. So basically, you have to have a 2012 domain controller up and running, and you have to have a 2012 domain controller So basically your PDC emulator, the FISMA role for PDC emulator has to be on 2012, and your cloned image has to be a 2012 server cloned image, obviously, and then you can clone as many DCs as you want as long as they're authorized. Oh, reboot at the end, it's all good. Requirements, I mentioned, you have to have it, PDC FISMO on 2012. 2012 has to be the host, the virtual system. It has to be in a VM Gen ID aware hypervisor. Which one is that again?
Yours.
Thank you. It's ours. Source domain controller has to be authorized. It literally is a group that says clonable domain controllers group that is created with that, with 2012. The DC clone config.xml file is created for you by the PowerShell scripts, and it contains the information that you want to have for identifying your PDC emulator and other things like that. And here is the blog post that actually details it all for you. The steps are really quite simple. It gives you the command syntax to be able to go off and do that, but you're all going to download these slides and take a look at them, so I'm not going to go off and read that. Platform changes. I'm just realizing I'm not even paying attention to how much time I've got here. Okay, I'm still good. Platform changes. RIDs. Who knows what a RID is? Relative ID identified. How's a RID used? You said the magic word. Come down and get your maple syrup, my friend. A RID is basically used to identify the SID of the machine and to make it globally unique across the organization. The RID is very important because there's a finite number of RIDs that you can have inside your Active Directory in total. And there's some things that came up that could possibly cause some exhaustion of that RID space, where you really can literally run out. Generally, it's something that goes wrong with a third-party service, it's not us, that does something to exhaust your RID pool. But there were a couple of bugs that they were identified and they were fixed, and I'll talk about some of them that are here. And also some need for some general improvements to warn you when you're getting close. Now, anyone guess how many RIDs you can get for globally unique identifiers inside your Active Directory? Pardon me? A billion. Yes, very good. It's not worth a maple syrup, though. Sorry. Yes, a billion RIDs. And so you'd have to have a billion objects inside your Active Directory to be able to hit this high watermark, if you will, of reaching exhaustion. So generally speaking, it's a scale issue. So some major points behind this. The first one was there was a potential flaw where if you had a large number of accounts being created, and they did not meet policy where they didn't have the proper password length or something like that, the RID would basically be wasted and just disappear and be exhausted. Now what we've done is basically we've created an in-memory RID pool on a per-domain controller basis. So if you're creating objects against that domain controller, like user accounts, and they don't meet the policy for some reason because you have a junior admin making user accounts, they're not going to waste your RIDs. It's going to reuse a RID from the RID pool in RAM first before it goes and uses one from its master pool off the local machine. And unfortunately, each time you reboot your domain controllers, you lose that RID pool and it goes away. So don't reboot your domain controllers and you won't have that problem. But again, we're talking billions of IDs here, right? This is a very, very small thing. So anyway, it's fixed now. You can reuse this list. And then the mentioned here, the list is bound by the maximum number of user creation attempts that simultaneously hit it. Generally speaking, it's single-digit numbers that you're going to have a problem with this particular session. Another one could be a failed computer account creation by someone that potentially has the rights to make computer accounts. Same sort of deal, same as above, because it's a computer account-based. And then also, there was never an event logged when you're getting close to the max. So now we log the events when you're getting close to the max for your RIDs being used. Another one that came up to another reference where possibly computers can basically go, domain controllers can go, and goes in and checks, realizes it doesn't have enough RIDs, goes and requests more, has a problem, checks again, thinks it ran out, so goes and asks for more, and then goes and asks for some more, and basically just continuously cycles through this, where basically, in theory, a single domain controller could eat 1 billion RIDs in 2 years with this cycle that was happening. We fixed this, don't worry about it. It's now gone. And then also there's now a maximum cap because you could change the size of the RID pool if you decided to get crazy with your registry editing for some reason. In the past, it was completely flexible. Now we put a hard cap. I don't care if you put in 1 million for your RID pool. You could in the past, and basically that would be the new RID master because it would have all the RIDs. inside your Active Directory. Instead, now we simply have hard capped it at 15K. So you can only get 15,000 RIDs on a single box and a single domain controller, and then it has to go and request some more. And then finally, that error log in the message I mentioned, that now will have an entry inside your event logs to basically catch your attention. You got something going on here. And so at 100 million RIDs, it'll get a warning message that happens, another warning message at 10% of that, another warning message at 10% of that, and so on, and so on, and so on. So if you start to see this big red exclamation mark inside your event logs that you finally check, you'll notice that there's a problem going on, and you can fix that ahead of time. And the lower it gets to the bottom, the more frequently those event logs come in. So in the new server manager, you have this great thing called the dashboard, and the dashboard will be red. And when it's red, something's wrong. So go look. RID manager, what else? There was artificial sealing as well, that basically, it's like a seatbelt. Except you don't have a choice. It has to come on when you go into the car. So basically, there's now an artificial ceiling that basically will prevent you from exceeding your limit. And you can turn off that warning once you hit it, again, to force you to think about why you're consuming so many RIDs that are in there. So you get a log event. You simply change it to true, and then you're good to go to be able to reuse up all of your RIDs that are out there. Now, some interesting stuff is... Is it here? Yeah, it is. Question for you. Someone said 1 billion. 1 billion is approximately 2 to the power of 30 for a 32-bit address. So there are 2 bits that are reserved that are out there. And so this is for a maple syrup. We decided that we needed to increase the RID pool space. And so we, you probably know the answer. So we basically relinquished one of those bits back into the pool to make RIDs. So we now have, instead of 1 billion, 2 billion RIDs you can now have. There was a special reason why that bit was reserved. What was that reason? What was it for? Anyone know? It identified certain types of accounts that were being migrated into Active Directory. This is a big trivia question. NetWare user accounts. Who said that? Who said that? Come on up, get your maple syrup. For some reason, there's not many NetWare accounts coming back and migrating to Active Directory. There you go, sir. So yes, the 31st bit was identifying NetWare accounts that were migrating to Active Directory, and so they were reserved just in case. The other bit is going to be subject of a question that I'll answer later that will give you the possibility of winning this lovely Samsung Series 9 laptop. That is a beautiful laptop. You have to come to my session on Friday as well. So the question that I'll save till the end will be talking about that 32nd bit that is there. Some other RID improvements. There it is right there, 31st bit, 1 billion and 2 billion. NetWare was the reason why I was there. It's now been unlocked. There's a utility that you have to run to be able to do it. All your domain controllers have to be running 2012 to be able to use that. I highly doubt anyone in this room has to worry about a 1 billion RID ceiling being hit and then have to turn that on. If it is, let me know. I'd love to go and have beer with you to find out what it is that you do if you have to turn this on next time I'm in town. Another one, which is always very good, index creations. If you remember, when you did schema updates, you had to go in and wait for replication to coalesce across all your domain controllers. There was consistency across the board before you could really go off and finish stuff up. So there is now, part of that was because of an example here, was a schema cache or schema refresh, which potentially could mean that it would have to basically place this undue amount of load on your domain controllers as it replicated and waited for replication to take place. So 2012 basically now has a new way of doing this, where it now says allows you to basically defer, or basically the default is it's going to defer rebuilding that index if it can. If an object happens to try to be created that's inside that new area, it'll then say, oh, that's not there, hang on a second. Rebuild the index, okay, I'm ready for that now, and then go ahead and do it. Or it rebuilds automatically on reboot. So basically, we've simplified and streamlined the whole synchronization process of getting your schema across the board replicated with this urgent replication process. That's now done. So very, very good. It's a quick little bit you have to flip to be able to do it, and it's all good. Another one, very minute thing, but some people are interested in this sort of stuff. DNTs are basically, if you will, think of it, if your DIT file is like a spreadsheet, your rows for the entries inside your DIT file, They're basically called DNTs. There was a finite number of them that used to be there. Now basically they're exposed. You can actually now query this within your PowerShell. You can query this within Performance Monitor to see if you're starting to run out of DNTs. The way you fix this basically is you would simply go in and demote that machine, basically get rid of the Active Directory database, re-promote that machine to ask for a brand new database to come in, because it doesn't. If you delete objects, those DNT entries that are now invalid are still in there, and they can't be defragmented and cleaned out. So basically, the way you fix that is you simply go off when you see these warning messages, DC promo it back down to a non, and then re-promo it back up again, or just deploy a new one because it's so fast to clone a system. Go ahead and do that instead. Another new cool thing that the platform now supports is this thing called offline domain join. This is good for workstation administrators that have to go off and deploy Windows 8, let's say, that's out there. You now are able to go off and basically prep the system so that the blob that is created as part of this offline domain join tool that you can deploy to this workstation contains information about the Active Directory, also where the direct access server is over the internet that you have to go and talk to, and also the group policies to configure direct access so that it'll work on that one system. End result, step back for a moment, what does this actually mean? You can now have a workstation that's a Windows 8 workstation that is non-domain joined at this point in time, and you can simply deploy the blob off to it for doing an off-premise domain join. It will find your DA infrastructure, it'll go in and get configured to be able to use it, and it will auto-join the domain and be good to go. So basically the account was pre-created in the Active Directory, ready to go. It simply goes in, runs that app, or runs that little blob, if you will, applies it to the machine reboots, it's now a domain join machine. So it's all good to go. Very, very handy to have that up and running for deployment. Another one that comes in from a perspective of coolness that's part of the client side is this thing that's called connected accounts. I don't know if you guys have played with Windows 8 as of yet. You've seen it during the demos that were on there. The ability to log on as a user ID that's actually a Microsoft account or a live ID or a Microsoft account ID that's out there. It's generally consumer focused that's out there. The idea is that you basically can interactively log on with a live ID if it's connected to a local machine account. You cannot log on to your workstations as your live ID if it's a domain joined system. You can associate the live ID with your domain joined account to be able to get the synchronization and the coolness that happens, but you can't actually authenticate to the local box as your live ID that's on there for domain joined systems. So that's simply a thing. It roams your passwords, your personalization settings and stuff like that. So this is what mine looks like on my machine here. You've got my domain ID at the top, which is my domain slash username or alias at Microsoft, and then I have a connected account, which is my Outlook.com account that I use to maintain all my settings. So you can have a domain joined computer, and you can still have the benefits of all the roaming data that goes around with you according to your policy. My administrator has allowed my internet favorites to follow me and my other settings like that, and my colors and my backgrounds and stuff like that. But I'm not actually authenticating as that live ID. I have to authenticate as my domain joined ID on my machine first, and then my settings follow me after that. And before anyone asks, as the second bullet point mentions there, the server SKU absolutely does not allow you to sign on and have any kind of a roaming take place. There are no connected accounts on server, so no one's going to be signing on with their Hotmail account to their servers. That's out there. Getting close to being done here. Connected accounts, again, on a local machine, you actually can see your Microsoft account as a security principal that you can authenticate against, which is kind of weird. It's there. Administrators can associate live IDs on target accounts, and then connected local users will appear as local users and groups that are in there. It's kind of a coolness factor for what's there. I've got, how much time have I got left? Look at my official timekeeper over there, who's caught completely sleeping. Come on, man. How many? How much? Don't you organize tech ed? You don't know the session slots? 15 minutes, perfect, perfect timing. So, that was all the platform changes. Big changes with RIDS, solved a lot of problems. Streamlined deployments, streamlined cloning, full support for virtualization hypervisors that support VM Gen ID. And who does that again? Oh yeah, we do. We support that right now. And just before anyone asks, to play fair, the company that starts with V, ends in E, they are indicating they will support it on the next revision of vSphere as well. I don't know about Citrix, how they're doing with it. But ours are running right now out of the box. Changes to simple things like install for media to be able to speed things up as well. The light fluffy stuff that's in here, some things about the AD recycle bin interface. This is some of the stuff that Tony would have covered in his session that started up before this one here. Recycle bin. Who here is running the AD recycle bin on their environment right now? Put up your hand. Come on, nice and high. Be proud. I'd see less than 10 people in this room. Everybody else, you are so missing out right now. It has saved my butt so many times to be able to have a recycle bin of individual objects that you can just simply bring back without doing authoritative restores. Oh, I hate authoritative restores. So the recycle bin is something you absolutely want to go off and turn on. You have to be in 2008 R2 forest mode. You have to be in that mode. You then also have to go in and turn on, as an optional feature, AD recycle bin. Once that's done, the old way of doing it was through PowerShell, and it was clunky to be able to go off and identify, find the objects that were deleted, and then go off and restore them back with the recycle bin. Now it's a GUI interface, and it's part of Active Directory Administrative Center. So Active Directory Administrative Center is your friend. Be aware, though, if you haven't turned this on yet, you can only restore objects from the point which you turned it on from. So get up to 2008 R2 mode and turn it on sooner rather than later. That's out there for doing that. Here's the interface, what it looks like. You right mouse click on an object under deleted objects inside the tool. You then say restore. And you can even say restore to a different location if you wanted to, which is really, really cool. And it greatly reduces your recovery time. You don't have to blow your brains out trying to figure out how to do an authoritative restore and what else you might have affected when you did it. It's now all part of being in there, and it's all happy. 2012 Administrative Directory, Active Directory Administrative Center. And it uses the default value of 180 days. So your objects are saved inside this recycle bin for 180 days after deletion. Again, it should not affect adversely the size and growth of your DIT file. If it does, you can shrink it down. Defaults should work for you for how long you keep this information around for. Dynamic access control. I'm going to put you on the spot again. Are there sessions on DAC in here? That's unfortunate. I would have done one. I'm sorry. I didn't know that there wasn't anyone. Dynamic access control is the hallelujah of what you can now do with Active Directory. It's the biggest, coolest piece. And the funny thing was, it was not actually created by Active Directory team. It was created by the file services team because it deals with access to objects like files and folders. I mean, think about it. AGLP. Who knows what that stands for? AGLP. Come on. You put global groups inside local groups, so access to resources, you protect them with global groups that are nested inside local groups that are then going and put onto the access control list at the object level, AGLP, the old-fashioned way of doing things. So you inherited an Active Directory. You've got 15 different business units across 5 different cities and in 3 different buildings per city. You need to create a group structure that mimics that because that's how your security is done. And so you make all these global groups, and you nest them inside other global groups, and you put users inside these different groups, and then Anthony moves from accounting to sales, and Shirley moves from executive VP, gets demoted down to a garbage sweeper or something like that. You know, whatever. You got people moving around. Who remembers to take people out of groups? And so even after the job change, they still have access to stuff. It makes no sense. It makes sense for what you can do with it now. But there's this phenomenal little field in Active Directory called department that can be filled with a department name that kind of mimics everything that we just talked about, but it's an attribute. Wouldn't it be great to be able to go in and simply have a ACL that says if attribute department name equals finance, grant them access? That's a claim, claims-based access. That's the simplest form of what it is. If you get a chance to, go to channelline.msdn.com, look under events, look under Tech Ed North America. There's about 5 or 6 sessions on dynamic access control, and that's one facet of what it can do. The main short part about dynamic access control, because it's a huge topic to understand, it will not replace your group infrastructure. It can be phased in parallel with it. The most restrictive rights out of the shares, out of the group memberships, and out of the claims are what apply to the end object. And it's a very, very simple thing. Imagine populating your Active Directory with attributes, like it should have, and then setting up conditional rules, even better. If department equals finance, and country equals NZ, and the OU object equals blah, whatever, then grant them this level of right. And if it comes in and says, you know, or intern, deny access. You can do all sorts of fun stuff like that. So it's absolutely phenomenal what you can do. That's the summary of that slide, what it means. So it even works also for auditing as well. So as opposed to having to worry about different types of groups, you can also go in and apply this to auditing because it is an access list that's out there. So very, very cool stuff. It also supports file classification. So that way you can go in and classify your files. Nathan was talking about this in his overview session, the ability to go off and to basically have self-identified objects or blobs of data that look like credit cards and have a routine scan that goes through and looks at your documents and sees the blob that represents a credit card and classifies that as high. And then a background process encrypts it so people can't see it if they had decided to take it off in their USB stick someplace. So that's also file classification, how that works as well. Both of them are supported within Active Directory with Dynamic Access Control. I don't have enough time to go through absolutely everything in here, but basically it works with your clients for Windows 8 and 2012, and you need to have at least one domain controller running with 2012 to be able to do this. And activation is the next topic. KMS servers, key management servers. Anyone have any right now inside your environment? Yes, okay. You don't need them anymore. I'm joking. You need them for legacy clients. What's legacy? Windows 7. Next month is Windows 7 as legacy. You need them for legacy clients now. But basically now you can go in the environment right now. It's kind of a weird way to set up the KMS. It's like black magic, get an authorized, it contacts Microsoft, it activates your key. It keeps track of how many people are activating against them and stuff like that. And there's not really a good graphical interface. Oh, sorry, there is no graphical interface to be able to manage this. It requires a lot of RPC traffic to happen, stuff like that. So now when a Windows 8 machine or a Windows Server 2012 machine comes into your domain and you've set this up for Active Directory-based activation, it now can simply talk to Active Directory and retrieve the fact that it has a MAC key in there and then authorize itself and be done. That's it. It's done. That's how easy it is. So your existing Active Directory infrastructure can be used to activate your clients. No RPC calls. It uses LDAP only, so it's port 389. No additional setup is required. No dedicated machines are required that's out there. The installation is simply a service install. No data is written back to your Active Directory. It has a special configuration partition where it stores this data for the machines that are activated. All Windows 8 machines will automatically do a query to AD, find out if it's enabled. If it is, activate and be done. No KMS issues. Is that like a golf clap right there for activation? Yay! You guys are tough. Any reporting attached to it? It's an AD object. Yes, you can absolutely report to it. And what would you use? PowerShell. Yes, someone said it. You can easily go off new queries. Get AD object. Administrative tool? No. The fancy, it's Active Directory Administrative Center. Does it do the domain-based activation? No, it does not. There we go. PowerShell, History Viewer. So Tony showed you this one here, hopefully, as part of the ADAC. I always want to say ACDC myself, but ADAC for the tool. Where basically it goes in, and based on what you're doing, you can go off and view the PowerShell history. And as so many people have already said, if you haven't already invested time to learn PowerShell, go to the session tomorrow, which talks about learning PowerShell and getting started. Read up on PowerShell. Force yourself to use it if you haven't started yet. And gradually, the more you use in production, the easier it gets. That's all I can say. I'm a scripting guy. I script stuff. I don't program. Give me an object-based oriented language, and I turn blue. I have no idea what I'm doing. Now they have IntelliSense with ISE. Yay! They have autocomplete, yay! They have debugging and stop modes, whatever they are. They're inside the ISE. You mean I can stop my script before I screw things up? Yes. Oh, okay. I know what they are. Learn PowerShell, and this is one tool that can help you out significantly because it's going to save your bacon when it comes time for automation. History Viewer is all there. You can take a look at it. You simply have to have a 2012 AD Administrative Center installed. That's part of the RSAT tools, which are SIM shipping with Windows 8. And you need to have a Active Directory web service. You even have to have your domain in 2012 mode to be able to use this. It's there. Fine-grained password policy. This used to be the biggest pain in the butt in my Active Directory design mode changes for having to go off and justify the reason why you'd have to have a second domain or a third domain or a fourth domain is because of the old-fashioned password policy. Fine-grained password policy control existed in the previous versions where you could go in and basically make password setting objects, but it was all done through LDIF commands, and it was crazy and ugly looking and add cedit and crap like that. Now it's part of Active Directory Administrative Center, and I'll just leave it at that. It's great, it's easy, it's lovely, it slices your bread and works fine. Kerberos stuff. There's one thing I want to mention about Kerberos. There's about three more slides to go with Kerberos. This is the easiest one I want to tell you about. The biggest thing is the ability to go off and do what's known as flexible authentication secure tunneling, or FAST, otherwise known as Kerberos armoring, which basically means that now the conversation between the clients authenticating to be able to go and talk to the domain controller is now able to be even more resilient in case you're doing a password change or things like that, where basically the conversation can now take place where the private information of the machine authenticated to the domain controller can be used as part of the random data to secure and encrypt the conversation with the client talking to it. End result, what this means for non-Kerberos people, man-in-the-middle attacks are basically negated. You can't watch the stuff that's going on in between it because of the random data that's being used to generate the private keys as part of the local machine account talking to it. Great resource information that's in there. Requirements are running 2012 servers that are out there and that it supports it. Last little bit before I wrap up is simply group service managed accounts. Managed accounts that were group accounts in the past that were service accounts were tied one account to one machine and that's it, to have automatic passwords being changed all the time, which was a boo, not very good. If you had a web farm that was running, you want to be able to use this across 10 machines, you have to have 10 managed service accounts that are being used. Instead, now you basically can have a group-based service account that can be set up that now can be shared across 1,000 machines or 10,000 machines. You will never have to worry about changing your service account passwords again using this. I just said that out loud. You will never have to worry about changing your service account passwords again using this technology. That's a clap for sure for security audits. They talk about how to basically do it. It requires a schema update. You have to have at least one 2012 domain controller to support this. And the services have to run on 2012 for this to be supported. So that's the one downside to it, to be aware of it. And I think PowerShell, it's awesome. It's great. Go off and learn it. It's really awesome. It's now across being able to control site replication and everything else that's in there. Replicate jobs between domain controllers can all be done and be able to force replication across site links. Lots of cool stuff with Active Directory PowerShell, which previously you could not do in previous editions. It's now available. And requirements are simply having Active Directory web services installed and also having the RSAT tools installed as well. So, with that, I have a couple minutes left. In review, 2012 is easier to manage, where you now have global managed service accounts. You now have cross-domain authentication possible with Kerberos delegation. Spoofing can't really take place anymore for that much. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's very much more difficult to be able to do. Active Directory has some great UI improvements. Don't discount Active Directory Administrative Center. Go out, use it, install it, and work with it. On your Windows 8 system with RSAT, don't log on your servers anymore. Use RSAT. It's phenomenal. I'll show you all about RSAT on Friday, where you get the second half of the question to win this lovely Samsung Series 9 with a really cool... Can I get one of those stickers? It's engraved. Oh, nice. I'll hang on to that. That's cool. I like that. And it's easier scripting of replication and how that all works. Easier to deploy with being able to do safe virtualization. You don't have to worry about that anymore. The people that used to be naysayers to cloning your domain controllers or virtualizing your domain controllers can now put their fears at rest. Rapid deployment for being able to recover your information, ADFS for being able to support federation services that are out there. It's all fantastic. Summary of requirements. This is the most important slides that are out here. First, 2012 domain member being able to have being up and working with this individual is running 2012. That gives you the ability to run the new administrative center with PowerShell, with RecycleBin. Richer authorization of your system with now with DAC being supported. You can now do Active Directory-based activation as well. You can do Active Directory application commandlets with PowerShell. And you can also do Active Directory Federation services with one domain controller installed, no functional level change whatsoever. When you have your first Server 2012 domain controller up and running, you now have the ability to simplify your deployment. You have the ability to go off and do federation services again. Group managed service accounts now supported, and the virtualization safe stuff is out there. When the 2012 domain controller also holds the PDC FISMO role is when you can do your first level of cloning that's out there, because that's when the group is created for who's authorized, and he's the guy that can make the new stuff that's required to make a cloning system working for you. And with that, I have a couple of minutes to take a couple of questions if you're interested. But most importantly, I want to share with you some of these resources, yada, yada, yada. And most importantly, evaluations. I'm going to say this out even in front of Nathan. People that come from afar, as we say back up in Canada, have to get good scores to get asked back. I am not above bribery. But more importantly, if you want to get a hold of me on Twitter, @RicksterCDN, you can also check out my blog at regularitguy.com or email me at rick.claus@microsoft.com. I'm here all week. Thank you. You've been so attentive for this entire one-hour session about Active Directory. You guys have been absolutely awesome. I'll take some questions, but thanks.